Now you should be good.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Mark Brachtel. I'll be the legal counsel today for the board meeting. Can I be heard?
Yes, Mark, we hear you.
Oh, good. Thank you. Right. And I'm sorry, you must be Dr. Moffitt.
I am. Kelly Moffitt. Hi.
I saw your name on the left side of my screen, so I deduced. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm still waiting for everybody to sign in here before we start the meeting.
Got it.
Madam President, if you want to go ahead and begin, I think we may have a quorum after roll call.
All right. I'd like to call this Arizona State Board meeting to order March 4th at 9:03. Ms. Chavez, would you call?
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Madam President. Dr. Mastores?
Present.
Dr. Cohen? Dr. Cohen, noted absent. Dr. Carpenter,
present.
Public member Diva Gallen, hi, I think you're muted. You're on mute. Diva Gallen?
It's Gallen, Ms.
Oh, Gallen, I'm sorry.
Here, sorry.
Thank you. I do apologize. Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Let the record show we have one public and one professional seat vacant. Staff, Ms. Whalen, Executive Director?
Present.
Ms. Chavez is present. Legal Counsel, Mona Baskin?
She is absent, but Mark Brachtel is here in her stead, and I'm with the Attorney General's Office.
Noted absent, and Mark Brachtel, yes. And let the record show, Madam President, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. The board meeting statement of purpose, a license to practice optometry in the state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded, with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item C, President's report. I was going to just reiterate that our Assistant Attorney General Mona Baskin is unable to join us this morning, and then I wanted to extend a welcome to Mark Brachtel, who is joining us as board counsel for the day. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
Item agenda D, initial review, consideration, and possible action regarding language and terms in the proposed consent agreement and order regarding IR number 202213. Dr. Kelsey Stevens. We had a consent agreement to review, which details our thoughts and concerns from our previous meeting. So I'd like to open this up to the board for consideration. Any thoughts on the consent agreement, any amendments that you'd like to make, any thoughts with the presentation? So I still don't see Dr. Cohen present. Is he expected to attend today, Margaret, as far as we know?
He is not, Madam Chair.
Okay. Dr. Carpenter, do you have any thoughts regarding the consent agreement?
So I wasn't at the last meeting. Was this addressed in the last meeting as a complaint, and then this is the follow-up action?
It is.
Okay. Yeah, so I read through all that, and I thought, having not been to the last meeting, I thought it sounded thorough and sounds like a good plan to move forward.
Okay.
Dr. Mastores, I agree. I think it looks good and appropriate.
Okay. Ms. Galan, any thoughts? You're on mute, Ms. Galan.
No, I'm just looking back over it really quick, but
okay.
Yes, no thoughts at this moment.
Okay. So, Margaret, I noticed that Dr. Stevens had joined us this morning. Is it appropriate to give her a moment to address the board if she has any concerns?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, Dr. Stevens, you weren't with us when we reviewed your complaint. If you would like to take a moment to address the board or have a discussion, I think this might be a nice opportunity to do so.
Okay. Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I can't get my video working, but as long as you guys can hear me. So, I wasn't able to attend the last meeting just because I was, I couldn't get anyone to cover my patients, but I just wanted to address the board and say that I truly did not do anything with ill intentions. My goal is always to do right by my patients and make the right choices for them and listen to them and do the right thing. And I truly did not, I truly did think that I had the right diagnosis and I was making the right decisions for them. And I understand that you guys have come to an agreement of what you think the appropriate actions are. And, my biggest concern with the consent agreement is just the suspension of the license for a month. I think that will put my job at risk. I think that would put my mental health at risk. I think that would put a lot of stress on my life, just financially, mentally, my career. And I did not do anything with ill intentions, as I said. And I just think that could be a little detrimental. Just for me moving forward. And as I said, I truly did not write this patient off. I spent time with him. I listened to him. I think he can attest to that. I mean, I was with him for like over an hour. And as I said, I never intend to do anything harmful to my patients. And I just wanted to let the board know that. That's really all I have to say.
Okay, Dr. Stevens. I'll make comments and then anyone else on the board who wants to make comments, I think this is the appropriate time to do so. So anyone else who wants to speak also, please feel free. For my own part in the discussion from the complaint regarding patient PC, I don't think that anyone regarded your behavior or assessment as malicious or anything along those lines. The reasons that we concluded that these should be the consequences, I guess, of these decisions are essentially that it's a pretty serious miss. And when you have a patient present, right, with a complaint like he did, it's inadequate to simply decide that that's the end of the line and that there's no other treatment, no other second opinion, no other referral necessary. So that's really where you took a misstep, in my opinion. And that's where you can have a misdiagnosis. You don't always know what the problem is when someone presents, but you do have to seek further information to make sure that you've ruled out any other potential problem. And you didn't do that. You jumped to a conclusion that there was no further assessment, no further treatment needed. And had the patient listened in this case, there would have been very serious consequences, not just to his vision, but potentially to his life. So, neurosyphilis in this case is an end-stage syphilis and can result in loss of life. It's a very serious miss. And so our intent was, at least for my own part, to get your attention so that this is not a mistake you make again. When you have a patient present with a serious complaint such as this, it is always a good idea, even if you feel certain, which in this case you were incorrect with your diagnosis, but even if you feel certain in your diagnosis, to get a second opinion. And so this is the big problem as far as I'm concerned. For my part, and I would state this to the other members of the board, I would be willing to decrease the license suspension, I would think, to 15 days. But that would probably be all I would consider. And Margaret, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time and place to bring something like that up, but is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. I actually, may I be heard for just a moment on this issue? So, Madam President, members of the board, historically, suspensions are not 30 days. It would have to be, I know you consider this very egregious, but when you look at the big picture, it might as well be revoked if we're talking 30 days. I would recommend that the board consider 3 to 5 day suspension and maybe a civil penalty in lieu of the extra days of suspension. A monetary loss is a monetary loss, whether it's through her practice or through actual, money out of pocket. So if you would entertain that, I think that would also be a good option instead of the 30-day suspension. I do think 30 days is a lot. Historically, this board hasn't suspended 30 days for, disciplinary action similar to this. So I would ask that you at least consider lowering the number of days.
Okay. So I think I said my piece, and I'm going to let the rest of the board members have a chance to address.
Dr. Mastoris here. Thank you, Dr. Stevens, for talking to us today. And I agree with everything Dr. Moffitt said. After reading the draft, I did feel like we were a little harsh. I do feel like we could lower the number of days of suspension. I do like that we finally decided with the CE and being oversaw because, Dr. Stevens, you are a younger OD and this is an experience that you'll never forget. And we just want you to get all the information you can. We all can benefit from that in our careers. So I think that having your charts reviewed and doing the CE and reducing the sentence to maybe 3 days would be more appropriate here. That would be my opinion. Thank you.
Dr. Carpenter, any thoughts?
Yeah, so this is Dr. Carpenter. I appreciate the context from Margaret as far as what's been done in these cases in the past. And also, Dr. Stevens, good to hear from you this morning. As I read the original complaint and then also the consent agreement, again, not knowing a lot of context as to what's typically done in these cases, I also did feel like the 30-day suspension was pretty harsh. I think the message has been sent, and I think it's been a good learning experience, as was expressed for Dr. Stevens and for all of us, just to be cautious in these cases. So I would tend to agree that maybe a 3-day suspension and then just the other parts, the additional CE and the chart review would remain.
Ms. Galan, any comments? You're on mute. Ms. Galan?
All right, and for some reason, it's like a slight delay on my end. I'm going to, in a second, try and go out and come back in. But, I mean, I didn't know that the precedent may be a slightly different for the suspension. To me, it sounded okay, but I understand. Can you hear me? Yeah. So for me, that I didn't know that the precedent was different for the type, maybe the suspension and that type of thing. So if that's the case, then I would be fine with the shorter time.
Should I make a motion, Margaret?
Oh, I just wanted to finish my comment, Dr. McNorris.
Oh, sure.
I just wanted to say that I do think it's appropriate, maybe not the 30-day suspension, maybe a shorter suspension, but I'm willing to go along with the rest of the board on this, but I want to reiterate in this instance that the purpose of the board is to protect the public health. And in this instance, I feel like public health was threatened. And so I'm hoping that Dr. Stevens takes that seriously, remembers this going forward, and applies this in her daily practice. So Dr. Mastoris, if you want to make a motion.
Okay, I motion to edit the, what's it called?
Modify the consent agreement.
Modify the consent agreement to reduce the suspension of license to 3 days and keep the rest of it the same.
Excellent.
This is Dr. Carpenter. I second the motion.
So I have a motion to reduce the license suspension to 3 days in the consent agreement. Is there a motion and a second? Excuse me. Any further discussion? Okay. So we'll vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Oh, you know what? She might have left to come back.
we need to wait for Madam President. We don't have a quorum without her, so
we'll just wait
until she comes back. Sorry.
That's okay.
Ms. Galan is coming back on right now.
Okay.
Well, she was.
I see her at least.
Oh, there she is. Okay. Oh, there she goes. There. Okay. We have our quorum back.
So we were getting ready to vote. And Ms. Galan, this is a motion to reduce the 30-day suspension to a 3-day suspension while keeping the rest of the consent agreement intact. So it's been moved and seconded. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
I vote in favor.
Okay. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So motion passes 4-4.
4-0, Madam President.
4-0, excuse me. I heard that after I said it.
Oh. Sorry, I didn't mean to preempt you.
So moving on, agenda item E, review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews or complaints. This is regarding, first, are there any conflicts of interest among board members regarding this complaint with Dr. Upel? Okay. I have none. So this is regarding IR number 202216, Dr. Upel. And is patient PG present? Looks like you are.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And is Dr. Upel present? I don't see him here. He's not on the phone, Margaret.
Patient PG is here, I believe. Mm-hmm. He's muted.
Oh, yes. I already said I'm here.
Yes. But Dr. Upel, Margaret's not on the phone.
Excuse me, I apologize. No, he is not present.
Okay. All right. And would one of the board members like to summarize this complaint?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I can summarize it. So patient PG went to have an eye exam with Dr. Upel. Back in January, on January 9th, and he felt like the exam, based on his description, was very short. He emphasized that Dr. Upel had him read only one line in large font and then gave him two image options, asking which one is clear, and then that was the end of the exam. So he, what's being said here is he didn't feel like the exam was very thorough. Got his glasses and felt immediately something was off. So he went back 2-3 weeks later for a follow-up with one of Dr. Upel's colleagues, and where a different prescription was found, and then the glasses were remade. So the complaint was, if I'm reading this right, the concern was is he didn't feel like adequate time was taken to address his prescription, and that the wrong prescription was prescribed as a consequence to that.
Okay, thank you. And patient PG, if you would like to summarize your complaint or have any further comments for the board before we review the complaint, this is your opportunity if you'd like to address it.
Sure. I think Dr. Carpenter summarized it pretty well. I just felt there was neglect in the sense of the doctor in terms of subscribing a prescription. Had I been not cautious and aware, my eye would have worsened and gotten used to this prescription. Everything was extra large because it was the wrong prescription. And it was hurting my eye, so I stopped wearing the glasses. And immediately I went ahead and got another prescription, and I do have a 20/20 vision according to the next doctor. So I do feel there's some neglect on this doctor's behalf.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Upel is not present still. So I'm going to move forward then, and thank you, Patient PG, for your comments, and open this up to the board for discussion. Any discussion from the board members regarding this complaint?
This is Dr. Carpenter. Is it appropriate for me to ask PG a question directly?
Yes.
So, PG, can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
So I just wanted to clarify, is your main concern, obviously the prescription was wrong, it caused some eye strain and that needed to be corrected, but was a major concern is you felt like the actual refraction, the process of determining your prescription, did you feel like that was rushed and not thorough enough, or are you mostly frustrated that you arrived at the wrong prescription?
Both. I definitely was rushed and wrong prescription, so both are concerning to me.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Dr. Carpenter. As far as the prescription goes, you know, as optometrists, we know how that goes. We know that vision can vary by a quarter step, you know, from one day to the next. And it's not unheard of to, for whatever reason, a number of factors to find a prescription such as this, and then a week or two later, find one that's a little bit different. So that's not unheard of. Obviously, the time that was spent with the patient wasn't enough to make the patient feel comfortable. Perhaps if there was better communication and he felt better about his experience with the doctor, he wouldn't be as frustrated with the wrong prescription and having to have that redone. But I don't see anything other than maybe being rushed in the exam too egregious about, you know, what was found at that first examination, and it did seem to get rectified.
I actually want to add a comment if I can. It was more than a quarter. I believe it was, I don't have the record in front of me, but it was like a half or three quarters of a difference. And the actual prescription was 0-0. And he had one was plus 2.5, and I think one was plus 50 or plus 75.
So, Patient PG, I appreciate your comments. I'll remind you that this is a time only for the board to communicate amongst themselves. We'll ask you if we have a direct question. To your point, it was minus a quarter on one eye and minus 50 on the other was the amount that the prescription was off from my own review. One thing that I think is relevant, so I'm in agreement with Dr. Carpenter's comments, and a prescription can be inaccurate for a number of reasons. So, and it can be because the doctor didn't take enough time. It's possible. There are other possibilities as well. One thing that sticks out to me in your case is that I think you were 41 years old. And in the early 40s, a lot of the time, the eyes are sort of starting to lose their ability to focus at near. And it's easy to over minus the prescription. If you have fatigue or if your eyes have been working hard, depending on what you do before you're coming into the exam, you can over minus fairly easily. This prescription, as much as prescriptions can be sort of egregiously off, this is not egregiously off. So for my own part, and I appreciate Patient PG's concerns, I don't see any violation of the Optometric Practice Act on the part of the doctor here. I'll open this up to Dr. Mastores also, if she has any comments to make.
I agree with everything that's been said. I do hope that the glasses were remade for you in the new prescription and that you're seeing better. But this can happen, and I don't think there was a violation either.
Ms. Galan, do you have any comments?
I agree. I didn't see. I couldn't pinpoint a specific violation here.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I motion to dismiss this. Because of no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. I second. Any further discussion? All right, we have a motion to dismiss as a lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Let's vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. All right. Agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible action on pending regular applications. Dr. Nicole Thomas has an application in front of the board. However, there's a deficiency regarding the FBI or DPS report, which I think has been delayed of late. And I believe she would like us to review and approve her application for licensure in the absence of the FBI or DPS report.
Ms. Chavez, would you unmute and address Madam President, please?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Whelan. Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Thomas's application is complete, except the DPS FBI report has not come in yet to the agency. ARS 32-1730 allows the board to issue the license if they do not have reason to believe a record exists. As Dr. Thomas did not disclose any arrests or convictions, staff believes the application may be approved at this time. Would the board like to license Dr. Nicole Thomas at this time?
I think we'd like to take a minute and discuss amongst the board members. Any thoughts on this?
Dr. Mastoris, I just need more information. Can we hear from Dr. Thomas?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. So I just got a very sudden change in job, and we're moving to Arizona at the end of the month pending my license approval. I was offered a position at the Southeast Gilbert Costco location to run the lease there. And it honestly just happened so quickly that now I'm waiting for, in order to get my contract, I need my license approved. And so at this point, you know, I have no convictions. My national practitioner database information came in clear. I don't have any complaints on my record. I have practiced in Illinois, and I'm currently in Idaho right now. I've only been here since October of 2018. So I'm just almost to that 4 out of the 5 years. So I did apply through examination. And so everything is in, it's just waiting for my fingerprints to come through, which from my understanding will take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks. But as we know with everything, it seems like everything is so postponed. So this is truly like the one thing in order for me to get started and get my lease and be able to hire people and just kind of get things started. Truly, I won't be in the state until the 21st of the month. So my fingerprints may even come in before then. But studying for the law exam, I did know that this was an option for me, so I'm just asking the board if they could approve my license.
I think I just misunderstood that it's just a fingerprint issue. I didn't know if you had a pending case, or I was confused by what the FBI involvement was. So
yeah, that's understandable. Thank you for clearing that.
We had another case. So I think that if we're just waiting on fingerprints, we know that right now everything's taking longer than usual. If you have a clear record, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't extend you a license here.
I'll just pass on some information also to the rest of the board members so that they can consider this. But if we were to approve the license, if the fingerprinting came back with any differences from what our expectations are, we can open a complaint and review after the review or after the approval of the license. So for my own part, I don't see any reason to hold up Dr. Thomas's license. Dr. Carpenter, any thoughts?
No, this is Dr. Carpenter. I'm in agreement. I think we're fine to issue the license.
Okay. And Ms. Galan, any thoughts?
I agree. It sounds okay to me.
Okay. So I would move to approve Dr. Nicole Thomas's license without the DPS or FBI report at present.
Dr. Mastoris, I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. So we'll vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0.
I appreciate your guys' time. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let's see here. Agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement applications. We have an application for endorsement from Dr. Antonio Campbell. Does the board have any discussion on pending licensure by endorsement of Dr. Campbell?
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Campbell's disclosed two arrests on his application for licensure, as well as a detailed explanation of the arrests. There is a record of the arrests from the DPS FBI results. Would the board like to license Dr. Campbell at this time?
Thank you, Ms. Chavez. So I'll open this up to the board to discuss. I'll say that I find the arrest disconcerting, but from my understanding, there's no basis to deny an application.
Madam Chair, this is Mark Brechtel, your attorney for the day. May I just offer one legal comment to the board?
Absolutely.
Thank you. In the board packet, there is a criminal history information. And just as a gentle reminder to the board and board members that if you wish to discuss the contents within that document out loud to the board, because it is confidential, we would need to go into executive session. However, if you wish to generally summarize, not specifically addressing the information in that document, you may do so in open meeting. So there's a little bit of a fine dance, but I think if someone wants to read out loud from that criminal history information and then hold a discussion, that would be done in executive session. And that was just my reminder to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rappo. Any comments from the board?
So this is Dr. Carpenter. I agree with your assessment. I feel like there's probably not reason here to deny a license.
Okay. Dr. Mastores?
I agree.
Ms. Galan?
I agree as well.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion that we grant a license to Dr. Campbell to practice in Arizona.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, we'll vote. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item H, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123 between the time periods February 3rd and March 3rd. Licensees A through C were licensed. Any comments regarding those licenses, Margaret?
No comments, Madam President.
Not too long of a list this time.
Nope, not longer. The new graduates are coming, so.
I thought I had the wrong page. I had to look. Like. All right. Agenda item I, review, discussion, and possible action on adopting a policy or an application for telehealth services under ARS Title 36, Chapter 36. Proposed guidelines and policies provided for us. I was hoping that today we might offer our comments and thoughts on what we saw, and that we may also bring this topic back at our next meeting to offer even more comprehensive thoughts. So I have some thoughts and notes that I made as I went through this information, and I'm hoping other board members have some comments or contributions. but that we may look at this as the very important topic that it is and come back and also offer more comprehensive review after we've had this discussion today. So I believe we'll see this all again, but I wanted to take a stab at it now and then come back and review again together as a group at our next meeting. And I'll say that I'm going to call on each member individually and hope that you have very comprehensive thoughts on it. Okay. So I'll open this up first to the other board members. Any thoughts and comments regarding the proposed rules and guidelines regarding telehealth?
I was wondering if we could get like a little background on like how it was written, who started this project. I just want a little background on how this has come to be and where the initial dialogue or process came from, if you could.
Yes, Margaret.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Mestoris. This law was actually passed at the end of last year. Well, it was effective in September. It is in Title 36. It was a new section that the governor signed. And it was on the coattails of the COVID pandemic, where I think there was a realization that for a lot of the professions, it would be very beneficial to have telehealth or telemedicine within the state of Arizona and also outside. Optometry, as you know, is not terribly telehealth or telemedicine friendly based on how we practice, how you practice. I'm not an optometrist. But the law is fairly clear. It's just that I felt like we needed either guidelines or a policy to go with the law. It probably should be promulgated into a rule. But I thought in the interim, because I wasn't planning on doing a rules package until next year when we have our sunset review, So the language that's I presented to you was drafted by me and a few of my colleagues. The website language, that's that paragraph or those couple paragraphs was drafted so that we all the Arizona boards have the same language on their website. And then the other guideline or policy was really just an effort to help out the optometrists in their practice if they choose to practice telemedicine. It's very tricky because, you know, you can't really practice from out of state. I don't know if people were intending to use it, you know, for vacationing patients. I've heard all different kinds of scenarios so far, and that'll be our challenge as the profession. It's something that ARBO has talked about for the last few years, and you know, I don't love that we were included in it only because I'm sure you can't do a refraction on the computer, regardless of what company software is out there. So this was an attempt to clarify the law since we are getting more requests. Does that help? Is that sufficient for you? Or okay, thank you.
So this is Dr. Carpenter. May I ask a few questions as well? So I appreciate that background. I was wondering the same thing. I thought it was very well written. I was just wondering who it was who actually drafted that. But yes, as I read through it, I remember thinking to myself, so basically as an optometrist, you can't really practice telemedicine because there's so much that needs to be done. I mean, maybe a red eye situation, you know, where somebody's texting you. And but the wording in there, it did say many times, just because it's telemedicine, that's not a substitute for a full case history and you know, supplying all the elements of a regular exam, which makes it, again, it really limits how often an optometrist could really practice using telemedicine. And that was kind of the sentiment that you were saying too, right? That it's the profession's not a real friend. It's not real friendly to telemedicine as it is.
Correct. I mean, I feel like, excuse me for interrupting Dr. Carpenter, if I could just interject. I feel like the law was really written for the behavioral health medicine board. So on the psychologist examiner's board, board of behavioral health, places like that where they don't physically need to, you know, touch or see the patient. It's definitely beneficial for that. I mean, I think it's a great thing, but for even some of the other professions, you know, podiatry and things like that, I kind of feel like, you know, if someone has some damage to the body, how are they going to assess that over the computer? So.
Right. I'd be interesting to know. I've heard of like primary care physicians, one in our town recently moved up to the mountains saying, well, I'm just going to do telemedicine with my patients. And I'm thinking, well, how do you do that? What does that mean? I know he did a lot of supplements and nutraceuticals and things like that. So maybe to counsel on maybe if they're in town and they if he has a copy of their blood work, their lab results, you know, maybe from a remotely he can give some counsel on pharmaceuticals or nutraceuticals and things that they should be doing. But I'm just interested to see how this is adapted in other professions. Like, are there any instances where the patient maybe is in a clinic with a nurse or a technician gathering data while the doctor is conferenced in and elsewhere, but the boots on the ground, the people there with the patient are able to assess things and give them the data so that they can make the proper diagnosis. I'm just wondering, are other professions doing that? And would that ever, is that, are there ever anything that could be applied to optometry?
That's an excellent question. Actually, Dr. Lillian Vogel is in the audience as a member of the public. So I'm not sure if Mr. Brochtel, if you'll allow her to make comments since the board is discussing this issue and it's agendized, or if you want her to wait till call the public. But Dr. Carpenter, she kind of had a similar question, because I think, you know, people have been talking about doing that where they have an optometric technician in office and the optometrist is remote.
Mark Brochtel, to your answer to your question, Executive Director, if the public comment is on this agendized item, it can certainly be made at this time, if that's your preference.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Madam Chair, what's your pleasure?
I'm okay with hearing comments from the public. I think we're trying to keep this limited and yet still comprehensive, so I'll just preface whatever comments Dr. Vogel has to make with that, but Dr. Vogel, please feel free.
Hello, members of the board. I've been looking into this. I find it quite interesting, especially for the remote areas of Arizona where I'm doing some business consulting, and many optometrists cannot sell their practices. So what is the solution for the public? And there is a company that actually has the whole setup, the means to take all your data, even doing a remote, you can do the refraction from a remote location. You just need a trained technician and gather all that information and actually do an exam. So I'm just listening to hear what your comments are. I'm interested in seeing what we can do to be able to help the public out in these remote locations mainly.
Thank you. I would express skepticism. I know at the time, or at least at present, right, we can do retinal imaging, we can do things like that. And I understand some people may have their technicians refract or use other means of that, but I don't understand how anyone could be given a comprehensive eye exam with anything that's available at present. A good corneal exam, conjunctival exam, lid exam, lashes exam, anterior chamber, whether it's deep, quiet, or if there are cells. We don't have any imaging at present, nor are technicians trained in any way to solicit this information in an adequate fashion. So I'm stumped as to how this could ever be delivered in a comprehensive way, at least with our profession at present, given what we have as far as technology goes at present. I see this as a way of delivering problem-focused exam, urgent care when necessary, triage care when necessary. I think there's a real opportunity for that as far as expanding patient care and taking care of patients who don't have access to the doctor. But I don't at present see how this could be done in a comprehensive way. So those are my thoughts. And then I have thoughts page by page. I was going to tell you, Margaret, just as I went through this, I intend to go through that in a moment. But any other comments from the board?
I was just going to comment and say, I think it's interesting. I think pre-COVID, there was a lot of concerns of standard of care and things with telemedicine. And I would think a field like optometry probably wouldn't even been relevant at that time. But now in this kind of post and during COVID, it's expanded so much that I wouldn't be surprised if there are people, especially even in the optometry field, where they think it's viable whether or not we do. So, I think it is important to be addressed, and even though it seems to me it's a reach to do that kind of exam in telemedicine. So just my two cents.
Thank you. Dr. Mastores?
I agree with everything that's being said, and I would say it's hard for me to think how it would work out for a comprehensive exam, but I do understand the problem focus, triage, things like that. So I don't know if we needed to put language in there, although I do think there is some in there that creates that. So, you have to have a chart, you have to have the history, you have to have a relationship with the patient prior. Those are all the sort of guidelines that I had heard of prior. And I'm questioning if this is already going on in Arizona. Are people already doing this? Are they already having those telemedicine visits that are those types of triage, follow-up? Yeah, those are my questions.
Yeah, I would bet that they are during the pandemic, which is part of at least comments that I made going through this. And my thoughts is that, again, that this is based on a necessity, the need for care, as opposed to convenience-based. And so I think that the language needs to reflect that, and my comments are geared towards that, in that direction. Any other comments before I go through some of this page by page?
This is Dr. Carpenter. Just one other question that was on my mind. Does the AOA or nationally, does optometry have a position on that? Is there a template there, or is it very much just a states' rights issue?
Madam President, may I address that question?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Carpenter, for your question. I believe the AOA is in favor of it, as long as, of course, it meets the clinical guidelines that are set forth by the AOA. So I'm not sure they have a clear vision or stance on it at this time, but they are kind of waiting to see where the states are going with it to support their position.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'd like to start out by saying that what you've provided us so far, Margaret, is very impressive. Thank you for all of your work on this. Very comprehensive and job well done. With that in mind, I went through it with an eye like I was trying to pick it apart. And so just trying to see any other uses that people would come up with this. And so at least on your Arizona State Board of Optometry scope of practice, I actually thought all of that was good. Written as is, I thought was good. The telemedicine provider and patient established relationship. So this is all on the first page still. It says under R4-21304, it uses the vision examination standards to as a guideline for what should be included, and along with community and current industry practice, I thought maybe AOA practice guidelines should be referenced there. So just to give that a little bit more meat. And I think that's consistent with the standards as opposed to just state standards, but general standards. On the telepractice telehealth page, it says website proposed language only. The only thing that I would change was in paragraph 3. It says, if an optometrist is currently residing in Arizona and practicing telehealth into, it should just be in another state. So that was just a little editing comment on that page. Page 2 of 4 on the Arizona State Board of Optometry Telemedicine Guidelines Policies. In the second paragraph, I thought that this paragraph was good and specific. I also think that something along the following comments should be added, that telemedicine is intended to expedite needed or critical care, not to circumvent standard practices of care for convenience purposes. I think that's a careful delineation between a patient who needs access to care as opposed to one who just doesn't want to present for care and a doctor who's providing or circumventing real care. Do you want me to repeat that, Margaret, or did you get it?
Nope, I have it. Thank you.
Great. In the next paragraph, it starts with, as guidance for both the public and the optometrist, the board has collated the following practices. In item number 1, it says patient-optometrist relationship. An optometrist who provides comprehensive eye care via telemedicine. I actually don't know if the word comprehensive should go there. And the reason is because I can't see an optometrist providing comprehensive care via telemedicine. I just don't see any way that they could meet the guidelines of comprehensive care. I see this only being utilized in any real way on an urgent basis or like as needed in the pandemic, like we just all went through. If we had a patient who couldn't present, but they needed something extended for them, it's on a necessity base. And so holding all telehealth interactions to a level of comprehensive care, the word comprehensive to me implies a complete eye exam or comprehensive eye exam, and I don't think that most telehealth interactions will be comprehensive, and so I'm not sure that word belongs there, so that was why I am commenting on that. Let's see here. In 1B, the paragraph 1B, it says the optometrist must provide, again, comprehensive care to the patient. And I thought the language might be changed to the optometrist is responsible for comprehensive care or eye care of the patient, not just the screening of the patient for the presence or absence of abnormal conditions or pathology of the eye, and this does not constitute comprehensive care. So screening of the eye does not constitute comprehensive care. Does that make sense? I think that sentence needs work, but.
Yes, and I appreciate your comments thus far. You know, I wasn't entirely sure what was gonna mean what and relative to our practice. So these will be really good questions for me to ask Ms. Baskin for legal advice on.
Good.
Great. Yes, thank you.
Right.
Very helpful.
My opinions, my thoughts on how it's read and what it means when I read it and what I think. So I just wanted to give you feedback on my impression of this.
I appreciate that so much, and I am not offended by any document that I ever submit to you, to the board, you know, tear it apart, change it, tell me you hate it. It's totally fine because I want it to be correct and relevant. So.
Well, I think it's a huge bite of work. Yeah, it's very hard to do. So anyway, at least my comments are meant to be constructive.
Yes, thank you.
On the next page, page 3, and I don't have too much more. On the next page, page 3, letter D, the optometrist must obtain or review all aspects of the patient's medical. It should also say social and surgical history. It says also in any available medical records, this should also include all topical and or systemic medications, drug allergies, and family ocular history. And this is part of any comprehensive, if you have an established relationship with the patient and they've done records in your office, you should have this. But just to be a little more comprehensive, those things should be included.
Are you able to tell me? I got systemic drug allergies and family history.
Medical, patients, medical, social, surgical, history.
Got that.
Yeah. Topical and or systemic medications.
Topical.
Drug allergies. Family ocular history.
Got it. Thank you.
In E number three, there's a, like three as in three I's there. Maintain in the optometrist patient's records an acknowledgement signed and dated by the patient, indicating that the optometrist has provided to the patient in written form, and then there's nothing else written. So I wasn't quite sure what they have to have signed and acknowledged in written form. It looked like something else.
I think I meant the consent.
Okay.
The informed consent, is that required for just treatment in general? I think I was trying to get at that, but I may not have articulated that.
I just wasn't quite, it's not totally stated, and so I wasn't sure.
Okay.
So that.
I'll look at that section again. Thank you.
And in agenda item F, or lowercase f, it says place the welfare of the patient first, protect patient confidentiality, maintain acceptable standards of practice, and properly supervise and oversee any technicians participating in the telemedicine process, thus maintaining appropriate control over the practice. So I thought that was all appropriate. And I'm not sure where billing and coding guidelines come from for electronic health or electronic medicine. But there are guidelines out there that delineate how you bill and how you code. And there are also going to have to be in recognition of those codes. And so I didn't know if Medicare, so I don't know if Medicare has guidelines. I mean, I've read some, but I just can't remember the source. And it's very specific, but they're going to have to be in coordination also with Medicare guidelines for EMR or telehealth practice.
Okay.
So I thought that needed to be added.
Got it.
Okay. And I think that concludes my comments. So, and I'll say again that for everyone else, I'm hoping that at the next meeting you've gone through everything with sort of an eagle eye, and that we all offer our best thoughts on this so that we can serve our profession well and public safety.
Most definitely.
Okay. Any other comments from the board? Okay. So then we'll revisit this at the next meeting. Agenda item J, and let me just ask Dr. Vogel, did you have any other comments you wanted to address on that topic, the proposed guidelines?
Sorry. I just wanted you to know, maybe I wasn't clear, but I wanted you to know the most important thing is that we do a comprehensive eye exam. So the things I'm seeing out there are very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm just educating myself as to what's out there. And things are changing. We just have to, of course, make sure that the public is protected. If you would like to ever, next, I'm going to Vision Expo. I'm going to study to see what is out there. So perhaps maybe I can report a little bit more as to what's going on. But I know one company tells me that they already have optometrists that are licensed in this state who are doing these types of exams. So that's already out there.
It's very interesting. And yeah, I'm happy to hear anything that you gather on this. I think my biggest concern is I don't want to see abuse of this occur.
Totally, I agree.
So you're welcome anytime if you'd like to share more information with us.
Thank you. I'll be at the next meeting then.
Okay, great. Okay, so we'll move on to agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing centers for proctoring of the jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R421203C. So we have some listed potential sites for the jurisprudence exam: the Miami-Dade College in Miami, Florida, the Windsor Public Library. I thought this was funny. We had two places called Windsor, but one in Canada and then one in Connecticut.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think they're related to each other because when I went and reviewed the Connecticut, it said that they specifically did not test Canadian applicants, but they needed to go to Windsor University. So I thought, well, I'm going to request both of them, even though the U.S. Testing Center was only requested. So it was interesting.
Okay. All right. So to the board members, are there any concerns regarding these proposed testing centers? Okay. So I see head shaking no at me. And then, so I believe we need a motion.
Yes. To either approve or deny.
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion to approve these three testing centers.
Okay, I'll second. Any further discussion? Okay. So we have a motion to approve these listed testing centers for the jurisprudence exam. We'll vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote? Oh, I couldn't hear you if you voted.
Hi. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep, I heard you. Dr. Carpenter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Mastorin?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So motion approved, 4-0. Motion passes, excuse me, 4-0. And agenda item K, executive director's report. Margaret?
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. It's my pleasure to present your favorite part of the meeting, as Dr. Chrysagas used to say. Item K1, the budget and accounting update. We are still in fiscal year 2022. That will end June 30th. Our current appropriation is $241,900. As of January 31st, 2022, our beginning cash balance $466,885 with an ending cash balance of $479,513. 58.33% of the fiscal year has elapsed, with the board spending at 53.22%. The legislative update, so I did shorten my list to bills that I specifically reported on last time. So if there were any updates, you can just kind of see where the bills are at. House Bill 2070 was open meetings, capacity, and posting. That actually was transmitted to the Senate on February 24th, so it'll be moving through the same process, first, second, third read, committee of action, committee of the whole, the rules committee, all that stuff. House Bill 2147, state agencies, veteran status inquiry, that hasn't had any movement. As of yesterday. House Bill 2162, the open meeting law violations and penalty, had a second read in the House on 119 of this year, and there hasn't been any movement as of yesterday. House Bill 2260, medical marijuana, medical conditions, still has not been heard, and it wasn't heard prior either. So I don't know if that's just a placeholder bill or they're saving it. House Bill 2371, state agencies cash payment acceptance, did have, it was transmitted to the Senate on February 18th. So I guess that bill will most likely pass. It's just an administrative bill that will require us to accept cash, which P.S. we already do. So House Bill 2412, open meetings, digital recordings, that has been transmitted to the Senate as of February 24th. So it'll go through the process there to be either approved and sent to the governor or not. House Bill 2599, administrative hearings. That was transmitted to the Senate on February 23rd after it passed through the House. So now it will go through the process at the Senate. House Bill 2605, duty to report. Requirements and interviews. That bill was transmitted to the Senate on February 23rd, so it will also go through the same process there. Let's see, House Bill 2612, that was transmitted to the Senate on February 24th. It hasn't had any, it had not had any reads the last time when I reported, so I find it interesting that it just sort of picked up momentum. That's the one that actually removes the good moral character requirement from licensure applications. So that's kind of interesting. Senate Bill 1015, medical records, minors, and parent access. That had a second read in the House January 11th, no movement since then. Senate Bill 1052, medical procedures, prohibitions, had a second read in the House on January 11th, no movement since then. Senate Bill 1111 was opioids and informed consent for inpatient settings only. That had a second read in the Senate, but no movement as of yesterday. Senate Bill 1127 was the state agencies cryptocurrency payments, thankfully has had no movement since the second read in the Senate in January. Senate Bill 1162, opioid prescriptions and intractable pain exceptions, went to caucus on February 1st, was transmitted to the House on February 7th. It's had a second read in the House on March 1st. So the bill is still moving slowly, but moving. So I expect that it'll probably move along at this point. Senate Bill 1167, Health Information Organizations, Confidentiality and Data, had a second read in the Senate on January 18th and is actually on the consent calendar for February 7th, but no movement since then. So it kind of got a kickstart, but then it's been stalled. So Senate Bill 1469, Controlled Substances Monitoring and Search Warrants. It was transmitted to the House on February 25th and has had a second read on March 1st in the House. So that bill is suddenly moving because it hadn't had anything since January 31st prior to that. Senate Bill 1476, it had a second read in the Senate on January 31st. It went to Minority Caucus on February 21st, but hasn't had any further movement. Senate Bill 1507, Criminal Conviction Record and Disclosure, has not had any movement since the second read on February 1st. The last bill is Senate Bill 1568, the Health Professionals Complaints and Investigations, had a second read in the Senate on February 1st, and it hasn't had any movement since then. Senator Bartow held her own bill. She retained it in committee of the whole. She has been working with the boards. You know, we are the stakeholders of this bill, so she thankfully and graciously has had some stakeholder meetings with the regulatory boards that are affected by this. I have given several paragraphs of input, as you can imagine. My colleagues have as well. We're trying to help, if the bill is going to pass, to at least have a draft that is sustainable and acceptable and effective. I still think the bill isn't quite there, so I'm hoping that Senator Bartow would seriously consider maybe holding it to even next session and really getting the bill amended properly. It's kind of all I can say about it. I just very respectfully say it's not a really well-written bill, and I do hope that our comments are being taken into consideration. So I'll keep an eye on that, but so far it hasn't, like I said, moved along since went to committee hold on February 23rd. Staff activity and updates from February 3rd, 2022 to March 3rd. We have processed 53 renewal applications. Three new licenses were issued. 19 phone calls were returned from messages left on voicemail. And 1,339 emails were received and answered. Future agenda items, I will put the telehealth policy discussion on there, Madam President. And so, members of the board, are there any other future agenda items that you would like to see?
Just our proposed training also, we have that.
Oh, yes. We'll put that back on. Yes, ma'am. Okay, board member training and telehealth policy.
Have you had any on the board member, professional board member replacements? Have you heard anything?
I have not heard anything, but I will follow up and I'll agendize that for just in my executive director's report. Thank you for that. Any other reports of any kind? Not reports, excuse me. Agenda items? No. Going once, going twice? Okay. Future board meeting date. If it pleases the board, I would like to meet on April 1st, which is next month. I believe Ms. Baskin is not available for the May 6th board meeting. So if we could meet April 1st, and then we would be looking at June 3rd tentatively. But again, as you can see, just because we don't have board council, our board council, we can usually find coverage if April 1st is not workable for you.
I am okay for April the 1st. Anybody else?
I'm okay.
Dr. Carpenter?
That should be fine with me.
Okay. Ms. Galan, April 1st?
Yeah, it works for me.
Okay.
Excellent. So, Madam President, I will put April 1st as our next meeting.
Great.
Okay. And that concludes my executive director's report, Madam President.
Okay. So, agenda item L, call to the public. Any members of the public like to address the board? I hear nothing. So agenda item M, would someone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Dr. Masters, motion to adjourn.
Dr. Carpenter, I second that motion.
Okay, any further discussion? All right, we've had a motion to adjourn. We'll vote. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Thank you, Mr. Brockle.
You're welcome, Madam Chair. Thank you. Have a good day.
Meeting is adjourned at 10:20 a.m., Madam President.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is
adjourned at 10:20. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Sorry. Yes.
Okay.